Let's go to argument, Stewart versus Frank. Mr. Audrey.
Good morning. May it please the court. I'm here this morning because my client's constitutional right to effective assistance of counsel has been violated. He is entitled and was entitled to a right to a fair trial by a jury of his peers. That right was compromised by the fact that he had ineffective assistance of counsel at his trial. The jury question is the key to this case. It has never been and is not now about the strength of the government's case against him. The defense was based on mistaken identification that my client had a mustache and a goatee on the date in question. But trial counsel never bothered to introduce any evidence as to what he looked like on the date in question. The officer who alleged purchased from my client, Mr. Corey Stewart, never told her colleagues or fellow officers that my client had a mustache and a goatee. And she failed to include in her police report, under the section asking for unusual characteristics, that he had a mustache and he had a goatee. In summation, trial counsel began the mistaken identification argument. The state immediately objected on the basis there was no evidence as to what he looked like on the date in question, and the judge overruled the objection, stating that the jury should rely on their collective memories. After they began their deliberations, they sent out a question. They asked the court to see the transcript regarding the defense cross-examining Detective Francis. They needed verification as to whether he had a mustache and a goatee. The trial court offered two options. The first option was to read back those questions that the defense counsel asked of Detective Francis regarding her failure to mention the mustache and the goatee to her colleagues, and the failure to include the mustache and the goatee in a report.
What did she mention to the identification?
She didn't. She mentioned nothing about the mustache, nothing about the goatee, nothing about facial hair.
Did she say it was in his 20s? With medium complexion, curly, perm style hair?
The description that was given is accurate, but it did not
include like facial hair curl? Well, you said she didn't give anything.
I said mustache, goatee, or facial hair.
And he was light in color, lighter than most African Americans, and wearing a black T-shirt.
The argument here
is that did she give all of that other identification?
As far as I recall, she did. She did not mention the mustache and the goatee. The trial court, as I started to say, offered to read back the two questions that the defense lawyer asked of Detective Francis. I believe that the trial lawyer further compounded her unprofessional and prejudicial conduct by saying, it's semantics. I think just one way or the other would be fine. Well, approximately 10 minutes later, after the jury was apprised in writing by Judge Dugan, the trial judge, they convicted my client. I can think of nothing more deficient or prejudicial than trial counsel's conduct in this case. The entire defense was based on mistaken identity, but she fails to introduce any evidence as to what he looked like on the day in question regarding his mustache and his goatee or any other type of facial hair. The second court, where we began this journey, in denying his motion for post-conviction relief, makes a subjective analysis of his mustache and goatee based on a booking photograph that I submitted, and concluded that the photograph shows a very thin and barely noticeable mustache. The trial judge was female, so she describes the cheek and chin hairs as scanty. She concludes that if the jury had been given the benefit of viewing the booking photograph, the outcome would have been different, would not have been different, excuse me. The Court of Appeals agreed with the Circuit Court, and we moved on to the District Court. Judge Grishbosh.
Why is that an unreasonable judgment?
Pardon?
Why is that an unreasonable judgment?
The Circuit Court?
Yeah, what you just said.
Well, it's unreasonable because of the wrong standard of care that she applied.
Standard of care?
The wrong standard, excuse me, of what applies in cases like this. If my client has a right to a jury trial, the jury should hear all the evidence and make that decision.
But if the state court concludes that it wouldn't have made any difference, then we're supposed to uphold that unless it's unreasonable, which is, you know, not
the law is very clear.
I think that the law that was applied in this case is not only not clear, but it wasn't applied.
Judge Posner just asked you, I'm talking about that we're bound by these state court findings.
You're bound by historical fact findings unless they're clearly erroneous, but we're talking about a case where the wrong standard was applied. And by that I mean is that it was not Judge Schellinger, who was the trial judge, discretion to decide whether or not...
You know, but look, key ineffective assistance of counsel is whether the defendant was prejudiced by the poor performance of the lawyer. And if the state court concludes that no, it wouldn't have made any difference, then we're supposed to uphold that determination unless it's unreasonable.
I disagree. And if I can continue, I'll tell you what I think the circuit court should have done. The circuit court decided whether or not the picture if the jury would have changed their mind had they seen the picture. That wasn't her role. That wasn't the state court of appeals role. The role here is to determine whether or not a reasonable jury could have believed if they'd been given the benefit of seeing the booking photograph. Judge Schellinger went in and said, oh no, that wouldn't make a difference. So did the Court of Appeals. So did the U.S. District Court. The point is they had to make a decision, not as to whether or not...
You lost me completely.
Okay. The standard...
Look, you have to show prejudice. You have to show that because of the bad performance by the lawyer, that probably resulted in a conviction.
Yes, and
there's an awful lot of other evidence in this record.
That's been the argument all along.
I didn't ask you what was the argument all along.
Yes, there's evidence that she saw
had a clear view of him. Isn't there also evidence that the same $20 bill that was turned over, they took off the other party in the house? The exact same $20.
Absolutely right.
Well, that's the other evidence.
Absolutely right.
Plus all of the other identification evidence.
But I think
the lawyer forgot one thing to talk about the facial hair.
And the point, again, is the jury sent the question.
Look, if the evidence is overwhelming, then there isn't, then the ineffective assistance claim fails. So you're saying because the jury asked this question, you think that implies they were in real doubt and the evidence wasn't overwhelming? Is that
absolutely. Why else would they ask it? They had heard.
Because it was one question that it was in their mind.
I think that the reasonable interpretation of the question is that it had been given the evidence looking for the...
Would have acquitted?
Pardon?
They would have acquitted.
Yes. Absolutely. There's no other explanation reasonable.
What about the evidence that Judge Coffey mentioned?
I'm sorry?
What about the evidence that Judge Coffey had mentioned?
As I said,
they ignore all that.
I was not in the jury room, sir. I have no idea, and I've said before, this isn't a question of whether there was sufficient evidence to convict. Clearly, there was. However, how do we explain the jury question unless the jury wanted to see verification of the goatee and mustache, and had they done that, I think they would have found him not guilty. I think that's the only reasonable inference that arises from that question. And as I said in my briefs, it's the jury question that keeps the clock ticking in this case. If that jury had not asked that question, I wouldn't be here.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And further? You want to save your extra minute?
Yes.
Okay. Thank you, Mr.
Thank you.
Mr. O'Brien?
May it please the court. I could not find in the petitioner's briefs any discussion of the standard for review in this case. And the fact is the standard of review is highly deferential.
Well, Mr. Arias put all his eggs in the jury question basket. So do you have a comment about
yes,
that?
Yes, I do. And the question, we can look more closely at that question. I think he's reading a lot more into that question than what's really there. I think if you substituted the word clarification for the word they used, verification, I think you'll see what they were really at. I think they were confused. I think because defense counsel referred to the mustache and goatee in opening argument and referred again to the mustache and goatee in closing argument and then cross-examined Detective Francis about the mustache and goatee, I think the jury was scratching their heads going, was there any evidence about a mustache and goatee? And then the question specifically refers only to the cross-examination of Detective Francis, where counsel asked Detective Francis, did you tell the other officers, the arresting officers, that he had a mustache and goatee? No, I did not. And I think it's reasonable to conclude that the jury in deliberating was there ever any evidence that he had a mustache and goatee? Not that it would make a difference in the outcome, but that they were confused. We need verification. And they just wanted to see the transcript of that question and answer. They didn't want any other evidence. And so I think it's reasonable to conclude that they were just confused, that there might have been a disagreement as to, yes, there was evidence, no, there wasn't, there was only this question and answer. And so that's all they asked for.
Did the state courts discuss the significance of the question? Did they mention the question?
When I recall,
there was no...
No, and I think they certainly discussed the fact that there was a question asked and that the judge correctly responded that there is no evidence of as to whether he had a mustache and goatee. And then the state court went on to assume that the booking photo accurately depicted the way he looked and discussed whether, had that booking photo been introduced, there would be a reasonable probability of a different outcome. My opinion as to what the significance for that question is strictly my opinion. I don't think any of the state decisions directly address that, but I think that it's a reasonable reading of the question. I don't think it's a life or death sort of thing, that if the answer was yes, there is evidence that he had a mustache and goatee, the verdict would have come back not guilty. I just think that's a real stretch here, and I think that's not a reasonable reading of that question. And you know, again, this court would have to conclude that the state courts committed clear error in both incorrectly and unreasonably applying the prejudice prong of Strickland, and that they committed clear error in concluding that there can still be confidence in the outcome. There is not a reasonable probability of a different outcome had this booking photo been put before the jury. And I think if you look at the photo, assuming that does correctly depict the way he looked that day, that I think it is reasonable for any judge to say, you know, perhaps a hypothetical jury might look at that and, you know, in one instance say, well, we have some doubt, but it's not reasonably probable that photo does show a very light mustache. It shows scanty facial hair. It doesn't depict a beard or a brush mustache or anything like that, a Fu Manchu or whatever. And she viewed him from 15 feet. If you look in counsel's opening argument, where she first mentions that he had a mustache and goatee on that day, in the next breath, and I think she said something to that, he had a mustache and goatee that day, much the same as what he has now, sitting there in court. But then in the next breath, she mentions that right before he went to this house, he was at a hair salon getting his mustache and goatee trimmed. So if this was moments later or an hour later, it's reasonable for an officer to look up and maybe not quite notice this newly trimmed facial hair from a distance of 15 feet or whatever it was that where Officer Francis was standing. And the fact is, she did not tell the arresting officers that he had a mustache and goatee, and yet they detained him based on the rest of her description, which was very detailed. And when she came back 15 minutes later, she looked at him again, and she didn't say, oh, no, I'm not sure, I didn't notice the mustache and goatee. No, she said, yeah, that's him. That's the man I saw. The reasonable conclusion from all this, and the reasonable conclusion that is that the irrational jury would infer that this really didn't make much of a difference. Whatever face or hair he had was just not sufficiently noticeable to make a major difference in the description of this man. And that Officer Francis's ability to observe the accuracy of her identification in all other respects, and all the circumstantial evidence linking Mr. Stewart to this activity, including his presence in the upper flat 15 minutes later, or a few minutes later, the $20 bill in his companion's purse, all of that leads to a conclusion that the state courts did not act unreasonably in holding that Mr. Stewart did not suffer prejudice under the Strickland standard, even assuming his attorney performed efficiently.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Stewart.
Thank you.
Mr. Otter, do you have a minute?
The jury used the word verification. And that's the
issue. Yeah. You know what I think is the fallacy in your argument? Suppose Stewart's lawyer had presented a parade of witnesses that he had a mustache and goatee. Then the state, of course, would have amplified this explanation that Mr. O'Brien was offering, you know, about how he's just gotten it trimmed and this and that and the other thing. Wouldn't that have neutralized these witnesses, given all the other evidence that Judge Coffey had mentioned, Mr. O'Brien mentioned?
I don't know.
You don't know. We have to make that judgment. We have to make a judgment. Was it reasonably likely that your client would have been acquitted if his lawyer had presented this evidence? And then that requires us to consider not only that evidence, but how the state would have responded.
My point only is this, Your Honor. The jury asked for verification. They apparently accepted the defense's argument that it was mistaken identification. The judges so far have gone in and they have used truth. We look at the bills, that each one of them have characterized it as scanty and thin. That's not what the judges should do. It's just that it's the province of the jury. These judges have invaded that province.
And okay, we understand your argument. Okay, well, thank you very much. And you were appointed, were you not? Or, no, you were not.
Excuse me. Not for this court, in state court.
Okay, well, thank you for your efforts on behalf of your court.